Small Studio is made possible by a grant from the Herbert Simon Family Foundation and with support from Nito Art Shop and Sun King Brewery. Find every Small Studio session along with band interviews and features at wfyi.org/smallstudio.
Hi, my name's Vess Rutenberg, and this is my Small Studio session. I'm going to start off with a song by a band I was in called The Pieces, called Soda Machine.
Staying in some hotel, and I'm trying to make a living on a soda machine. You're staying in some hotel, and I'm trying to make a living off feeling mean. You're staying in some hotel, and I'm trying to make a living on a soda machine. I met you in a country town, way outside of where I'm from. I've got one foot in in the lost and I'm found. I need a painkiller. I looked up in the sky and down at here. I need one more mile from ear to ear. And now you're staying in some hotel, trying to make a living on a soda machine. Staying in some hotel, and I'm trying to make a living off feeling mean. You're staying in some hotel, and I'm trying to make a living on a memory box. You're staying in some hotel, and I'm trying to make a living, and I'm trying to make a living.
This next song is another oldie, a band I was in called the United States 3 from our second record, La Tonde de Tompo. It's called Grease is the Word, and my roommate at the time, Michelle Marchessault, she had a dream that she wrote a song that started with the line, she's all over him, like really into him, and it ends with she's all over him, like over this guy. And I just thought that was so great, and here it is. That's the word that she heard as the puddles well up in her eyes. He's no big surprise. He got under her skin till she got all over him.
She's all over him like a wet blanket, and it burns her, makes her body glow and grease. That's a word that she heard as the puddles welled up in her eyes. He's no big surprise, as it turns out. She got under her skin till she got all over him. All over him. I don't know. Anyway.
All right. Well, that felt pretty good. I love the enormous mic. I asked for a larger mic, but it's all I got. Just kidding. a little engineering joke for everybody. I have a new album coming out this fall. It's called Tremendous Downtime. And I brought some of it with me here today from my small studio to yours. It's called Tremendous Downtime. Which goes back to something my friend Devin Ashley said. We were in a band called the Lemonheads together, and we had a whole week layover at the W Hotel in London. And we were playing at the Forum on Friday, and we were there all week long with nothing to do and nowhere to go. And he turned to me at one point, and he said, "This is some tremendous downtime." And I just thought, it just stuck with me. I just thought it was a great, great thing to say, a real... the only way you can really describe it. And I'm going to play some backing tracks along with myself. This is all me playing with me. Ambient with myself. This next song's called On a Rug on the Floor in the Afternoon. Take it away, Vess.
One, two, three. lost my eyes. This town is big, but it feels small on a rug on the floor in the afternoon. Well, I am steel and I'm softwood, looking like a prince is good. And just as cars go by, the light turns green and you look at me through the screen. With my feet in the air and my head's in space, I meet you at an unusual place. It seems as though I know I should, so I will. When it's time, when it's time, when it's time, when it's time.
That's a song for Kate. Is it? I've got a good friend. Who's a good friend to all of Indianapolis, named Jim Walker. Hang on there, guys. He made a sign. It said, "It's okay to try new things." And it ended up in my studio, and I took it home, and it was in my kitchen. And I just, every day I saw it, "It's okay to try new things." And I feel like it's really important to not get stuck in a thing, you know, to do everything the same all the time. I feel like your horizons will close in on you if you just do the same thing. So I thought it was inspirational, and then I started singing it, and then a song came out of it.
It's okay to try new things. Try new things lately. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things lately. It's okay to try new things. Try new things lately. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things lately. It's okay to try new things. Hey, it's okay to try new things lately. It's okay to try new things. All right. Try new things. It's okay to try new things. It's okay to try new things lately. It's okay to try new things.
And there you have it. If you're stuck in a rut, you know what to do now.
It's okay to try new things. Try new things. It's okay to 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 try new things. Your lover. here's my glass. Baby, here's my glass. Baby, here's my glass. Babe, here's my glass.
Small studio.
And now an interview with Fess Rutenberg from WFYI's Melissa Davis.
You are here today for our small studio session, playing songs from your newly to be released album soon.
I was.
You did something really different today, as that you brought in a reel to reel and you played along to it. Can you tell me how that process began, where you decided to use a reel to reel and you decided to go analog rather than digital?
Yeah, for me, I'm a little bit older than a lot of my contemporaries, and I just grew up playing and recording around analog equipment. It's what I own. I have a studio in Broad Ripple, Twin Mono, with my friend Jeb Benner. And it's just easier for me. I'm not great with computers. I'm okay. I can check my email and complain on Facebook, but I'm not really a great engineer when it comes to a mouse and a trackpad. For me, it was easier. I had a 1-inch 8-track machine, and I had tape delay, and the whole record was done on tape, simply because it's quicker, it's easier, and it's what I know. And we can talk all day about whether it sounds better or sounds worse or whatever. It worked, in the same way that Aerosmith made records on analog and later on digital, and I don't know. Maybe the old ones are better. I don't know. But so when it came time to play and I wanted to have a band, I thought, well, I'll just play with the tracks that I recorded. It's me playing drums and bass and guitar on 99% of the record anyway. So I just did that.
This new album, you've been in a number of bands, both locally and nationally. How did you decide to go solo and why?
Okay. It's a good question because you write a bunch of songs and you get some friends together and you form a band and you come up with a bunch of bad names and then you put it out and like the pieces, it's three of us and we made a great record or the United States Three. But I kept having to form a band, name it, and then eventually move on, and I ended up with all these bands and I didn't want to have the pieces play a bunch of United States Three songs or Zero Boys play whatever. So it just seemed like, if I'm Fess Rutenberg, I can play a pieces song, I can play a new song, I can play a United States Three song, I can do a cover, and it's all just me. It always, and it just made it easier for me to address my catalog at this point without being a new band. And so it's not really much different, except that I just went ahead and called it myself and didn't worry about trying to get two or three other people and name it something, and start over. So that was the real reason. And also, I felt like it was time to make a record that was just me. I haven't done a record that was my ideas. All my songs, I produced it. If you don't like it, you can blame me. You can't blame the producer. You can't blame that bass player. Nothing. It's all me. And so I thought it just... Also, I was alone in the studio for a couple of weeks. I had some downtime. Tremendous downtime, and so it just kind of ended up being the way it was, and there was no reason to pretend that it was a band record.
Did it feel like the process of collaborating with musicians, that can be so cool, did it feel lonely ever, or did
it's a combination of doing things just the way you want them, but which is great, I want this bass line to be this certain way, and you work on it and you do it, and it's really great. But also, it wasn't a lot of surprises, the guitar player comes in and does something you never dreamed of, and it makes the whole third verse come alive. There wasn't a lot of that, simply because I was by myself and I know what I'm going to do. You don't tell a joke and surprise yourself with the punchline, right? So there was that about it. But at the same time, it had that feeling of, this is all me. This is my drawing, and no one else painted any of the picture. And that's nice, too.
It's a lot of responsibility, maybe.
It kind of is. It's a little lonely. It's taken me a little minute to put out a solo record. I've started this process before, but there was no one to call me and say, hey, buddy, you working on that record? You know, what's the artwork? Because it's just me. So I had to kind of task myself. And I will say my girlfriend, Kate Fronsman, gave me some nice pushes, too. She's been very helpful. So thank you, Kate. Thank you very much. Awesome. But yeah, so there you go.
Cool. And you started with the Zero Boys when you were 18 years old. Was that your first band?
It wasn't my first band. I was in a band in high school called Jot, and we played. We were a regular rotation at the patio. We were a punk band with kind of, I don't know, strange other influences. But my first serious band touring in Europe, putting out records, was the Zero Boys, and it just felt so great. It just felt so great to be in a band that, I mean, they were my favorite band. I just loved them. I loved Terry's guitar playing, and I just wanted to be, I wanted to help that band keep playing. They were really great. They still are. And I just, that was such a great start for me. And I went from being a kid who'd never seen much outside of Indiana to being a kid who went on tour in Europe, and I saw castles, and I saw the wonder, you know, the wonder of the world was unfolded to me, and it really made me a citizen of the world and not just a citizen of, you know, Indianapolis. And it was wonderful. It was the greatest thing that happened to me. It was better than all the school and education put together that I ever had. So the Zero Boys played in, we played in squats. We didn't have monitors half the time. We slept with our jackets under our heads. We were on our third tour, but the first time we had a hotel room. We had one hotel room in Sweden, and we all shared. Wow. And it was better, really, when we were on floors, actually. You know, so it was a great way to start. Later in life, when I was on a tour bus, and we had these nice monitors and people carrying our gear, it was just, I couldn't believe it. I just, you know, I was not used to that at all. So I guess I wasn't spoiled.
Bringing all of those experiences, the Zero Boys, the Lemonheads, these well-known bands, does this factor into your solo work, or is this a whole new thing?
No, it all factors in, you know, it does. I learned to play lickety-split guitar playing in the Zero Boys. I learned a lot about being a solo artist from Evan from the Zero Boys. Evan from the Lemonheads. Talking about too many bands at once. But he's such a great singer, and he's very professional, but he also is a little unprofessional, and I was really inspired by that. Like, being a little whimsical and being unpredictable can be fun and alleviate some of the monotony, you know, of being an artist. You know, so I learned a lot from all of it, and I can't say enough about how lucky I've been. I can't.
Your grandfather is a very influential modern architecture figure.
Yeah.
And I read, you know, a few articles, and it looks like, did you intentionally sort of, I mean, you're an architect of music. That's kind of, did you steer away from the architecture because of the family history, or did you want to go into architecture?
I did.
Okay.
I was forbidden to go into the family business. My father was an architect, my grandfather was, and my great-grandfather was as well. But my father had seen almost all of his father's buildings changed or destroyed during his lifetime. I think there's only a handful left. I mean, one handful of his buildings left. And he just felt like it was too painful. And I've used this as an example. There are architects here in Indianapolis who are old now. And I think of them at Christmas time. I think of the grandkids coming home and saying, hey, Grandpa, can you take us around and show us your buildings? And him saying, no, there aren't any anymore. There's one, but it looks different, you know. And I think that's a sad thing. I feel like we treat buildings too disposably, and that the art of it, the beauty of it, has been kind of lost in exchange for monetary gain, convenience. You know, design build is a terrible thing. You know, you design and you know what you're doing, and then you build it. And if you don't know what you're doing, maybe you shouldn't build. And I am an idealist when it comes to the built world, because I don't have to be part of it. And so if I was an architect, I would feel maybe hypocritical, and maybe I don't think it would be fair to be an architect and criticize architecture the way I do, because I would be criticizing my colleagues. And they aren't my colleagues. They're my friends, some of them. But I have this freedom. I'm a guitar player. So a guitar player complained about my building. Okay. You know? And that makes it a little bit freer for me. I can say what I want to say, but I'm not competing with them for projects. But I can also be maybe constructive, you know? Remind them that, you know, a singular material on the outside of the building helps a lot, or putting it on a plinth gives it some power, and just simple things that I think architects have forgotten. And so, I don't know. I don't even know where we started with this. I have a lot of feelings about architecture, and I don't feel like it's a great... I don't think architecture is in a good place, and I'm glad to not be part of it.
Right. I'm thinking of musicianship and craftsmanship and creating songs. That's yours. Like, you have total ownership over that.
Those are the buildings in my mind. The baseline is the base of the plinth that the building sits on. And the beat is the columns that go along. And then the decoration along the cornice is the tambourine and the acoustic guitar. And the singing is the rooms that fill it and make it a lively place. You know, and in my mind, I'm building an edifice of sound. You know, and that's kind of part of it for me, is it allows me to be a fantasist and do my thing. And like I said, if you don't like it, you can just blame me. You know, it's just that, or if you love it, tell me. That's great. but I don't put it up at, you know, 38th and Central, and you know, it's just a different way of doing it. But I don't know, it's safer for me, and it's a place I feel comfortable. And I would love to build, but I like I said, I don't think it's a great world to build in right now. So I don't know. If you're out there, call me. I'll build your house.
All right. Well, I would like to talk about your new album. All the songs are awesome, but you can try new things. I think that is a really thoughtful song. And I think as we get into our 30s and 40s, maybe we feel like we can't try new things, or maybe we feel like, what else is there, you know, or what else is there to learn, or
I have seen it in a lot of people as they get older. I sometimes wonder if they really love the things that they love because they love them, or do they love them because they always loved them? And I don't want to turn away from new music because it's not the music I grew up on. And I don't want to make you listen to my Circle Jerks record from 1985 just because I loved it then. Maybe we put it on and it's kind of bad now. I don't know. It's okay to try new things. It kind of keeps things from becoming stale and hackneyed and repeating. I don't know, drive different home than the way you did most of the time, and go down a road you've never been. For me, it just keeps life from closing in. I've noticed in some people as they get very old, the experiences of even their own life start to go away, and they just, you know, they complain about the same little things. And I really, as I'm getting older now, I don't want that to happen to me. I don't want to be alone with the things that I always said. And, you know, maybe ask me in 10 years and I'll be like, I love architecture right now. These Walgreens are looking great, you know. Maybe not. But at the same time, I don't want to close myself off from things. I want to look at them and experience them. I'll go back to my grandfather for a minute. When I was a kid and we're driving around in the car, he was an architect in Colorado Springs. And you'd say, like, oh, I love that building. And he wouldn't just say, oh, yeah, sure. He'd stop the car and he'd say, why? Why do you love it? And you have to explain yourself. And so you start to realize why you would like something or why you don't like it. And that really gives you power. If you know what it is about something you like, I've heard people say, I know what I don't like and I know what I like, but I don't know why. They're halfway there. If you know, then you can keep on having experiences, and you can judge a record that came out yesterday by these criteria that you know about yourself. And I'm not explaining it well enough, maybe, but you can still try new things. You can still experience new things within your own taste, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Cool. Did your grandfather know that you were interested in music?
Well, he died when I was 7, 8 years old, 1975. And I think everyone in my family knew that I was going to be an artist of some kind. I was always building things, Legos and blocks, and I was drawing all the time, and I was interested in music. I just loved music. Though I listened to the radio as a kid in the 70s, and I thought maybe music wasn't for me. I was pretty sure that music was a thing that I wasn't going to like, but I felt like I should like it. And then later I started to hear bands that I liked, you know, the early punk movement, Beatles stuff, and things that just weren't on the radio as much as, or didn't hear much when I was a kid. And then I realized that music was it. It was really great, and it was 2 minutes of pleasure and this, I don't know, I just loved it so much. But I don't think, musician, probably not, but I think it was pretty obvious that I was going to be an artist of some kind, which I think is why my dad started in pretty early with the quote, I heard very much, I'll break your arms if you become an architect.
Oh my gosh.
He said it all the
wow.
time. And I was like, you don't have to break my arms, I'll do something else.
Wow.
He wouldn't have done it. He was full of hyperbole, but, you know, I didn't try him.
Right.
I didn't do it.
Are they supportive then of the music career?
Yeah. My dad, actually, he died in 1996, and it was actually 2 days after I was on the Conan O'Brien show. And he wasn't a big supporter of rock music. He called it yeah, yeah, yeah music in the way he said it, you knew he didn't like it. And he never really said anything positive about my music, but a couple days after he died, I was at his house cleaning things out and doing the things you do when somebody dies, and I found a stack of videotapes that he'd been copying the Conan O'Brien show over and over for people. And neighbors started coming over, and they said, you know, he went from door to door and told everyone that you were going to be on TV that night. And I thought, yeah, gotcha. You were kind of proud after all. He didn't want me to maybe know, but he did. So there you go. My mom, on the other hand, she's the reason I'm sitting here right now. When I needed a guitar, she loaned me the money. She used to come to every show at the patio. She weighed in on every song, whether I wanted her to or not. And she's just been wonderful. So, you know, kudos to you, Mom. She's great.
Aww.
So there you go.
And your daughter, is she excited to see her dad perform?
I think so. I perform for her all the time. We are kind of hams, so we ham it up. You know, we kind of dance in the car, if you know what I mean, and we have fun. So she's great. I don't know. I don't know what took me so long to have a kid, but it's certainly the coolest thing I've ever done. I love it. It's filled me with a kind of love I didn't know I had, and it's changed me, and it's made me a better person and a better songwriter. And I'm a pretty good dad, I think. She's a great daughter, so. Yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah, she's very supportive.
Do you ever write songs for her?
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes we co-wrote a song, kind of. I was singing a chorus one day, and she wrote verses. I mean, I don't know if it'll come out. It was kind of a silly song. But I think she's a little bit musical, and, you know, she tells me what her favorite songs are and not. And yeah.
Cool. Are there any artists that you guys agree on?
Well, the Sgt. Pepper remix came out recently, and I played it once in the car, and she was hooked, and then we heard Sgt. Pepper more than I maybe even cared to, if you know what I mean. But that was fun. That was fun to see her kind of fall in love with the record that I had kind of maybe almost forgotten about listening to, you know? I don't know why. It was never my favorite. I will say the new stereo mix, as much as it's sacrilege, it sounds great. It just sounds really awesome. And so we've been doing that. She likes Queen a lot. A little bit Taylor Swift, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say was your favorite thing about recording this album?
That's interesting. Well, okay, my favorite thing was having something to say and being able to say it. I would make a record every week if I felt the way I was feeling at that time. I was feeling strong feelings politically about about what's going on in our country. Well, there's that, and there was a lot of personal things, and the songs were coming, and I just had something to say. I had to do it. I couldn't hold it back. I had personal feelings, relationship things, and our national nightmare. And I just wanted to talk about it. You know, I grew up in a family of Republicans. I'm a little bit more liberal myself, but it was never a problem for me to consider one side and another, and to think about things. And you know, it'd be nice to have health care, but let's not run ourselves into the ground. And what about guns and all these things? I really can't. I can't go where we are right now. So it meant a lot to me to. I'm not a political person, so I'm not going to go too far down that road. But I don't think that white men are that important, and I think it's time for white men to start thinking about where we are and who we are, and that haven't we done enough? There's a lot of good things, and as a white man, I want to consider myself part of the solution and part of the inclusion of all people, and so. That was a big inspiration for it too. It was just great. It was just great to be making a record that I had to make. You know, if I just put it on a cassette and gave it to one person or put it out for everyone to hear, I had to make that record. So.
Is there a song on the album? I know it's like pick your favorite song. But was there a song when you were recording it, or when you wrote the song that it just came to you right away, or everything made sense right away? Is there?
that's how good ones are written. The good ones usually aren't a song you labor over for months. The good ones, I kind of feel that you don't write the good ones, that they are given to you. But I think it was Bob Dylan said, and I'm quoting someone who quoted Bob Dylan, so I'm wrong. Google it. but he said that songs go by in a stream, and you can grab the one. Or if you miss it, it'll go down and someone else will grab it. These little melodies are just going by and you can take them or not. And when you get one, it just feels so good. And It's Okay to Try New Things was one that really, it just came. And I had to kind of catch up and find a way to make it right. I tried to write verses, but it didn't want verses. And it was really there earlier than I thought. And there was... One Van Against the Government was another one that came pretty quick. I was trying to write a My Little Pony song, influenced by my 6-year-old daughter. It doesn't sound much like a My Little Pony song, as I don't either. But it was where it came from. But it came really quick. It just came as quick as I could write it down. And those are the best ones. Those are just, those are the ones.
Yeah. And the title of your upcoming album.
Yeah.
Tremendous Downtime.
It just sounds good, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. My friend Devin Ashley came up with that phrase or turn of words or whatever. We were stuck in a hotel, Lemonheads. He and I were always kind of together. He was the drummer, I was the bass player. And we were in a hotel for a week in London. We had a show at the Forum on a Friday, and it was cheaper to keep us at a hotel in London than it was to fly us back to America and bring us back a week later or something. So we were just sitting around. And on day four, we were, I don't know what we were doing. We were, drinking coffee at 3 p.m. And he just looked at me and said, "This is some tremendous downtime." And I just laughed so hard and I wrote it down and I always wanted to use it for something. So thanks, Devin. Thank you, buddy. There it is.
We've talked about the Indianapolis music scene with musicians who come through, and I feel like, how would you describe our Indianapolis music scene?
Well, for me, there have been a lot of Indianapolis music scenes. There was one of the reasons I am a musician was I discovered the punk movement here in the 80s, and I just couldn't believe all the talent and support. Hundreds of people would come to shows. It was, they used to do this thing called skanking where everyone would sort of dance in a circle and it was boys and girls. And if a girl fell down or anyone fell down, you'd help them back up. And it looked kind of violent, but it was very caring. And I just loved that. I just loved being a part of something that was artistic. And scenes have come and gone here since then, but I really just love that. I think we're having a little bit of an upsurge now, and we had a little dark time for a while. A lot of bands broke up and moved away, and it kind of comes in a cycle. I don't want to over comment on what's going on now because it's always changing, but I do love it because it's ours. We're sort of isolated here. We're like on the moon. So you'll see a band and you'll see their 15 shows before they break up, and they'll be your favorite band and everything, and no one knows about it. Maybe they went to Cincinnati once or something, but that's kind of the neat thing, is it's ours here. It really is ours, and that's kind of fun. It's just sort of fun to have your own thing, you know. But I love Indianapolis. I complain about it because I want to make it better, not because I want to knock it down. But I want to say, hey, you know, let's put some nice buildings up here, for Christ's sake, and, or, you know, put out a record. Don't just break up before you make it. And I try to be at least a cheerleader on the sidelines, if not an active participant, you know.
Very cool. Yeah. So what is the next plan? Do you think there will be a tour? Do you have another solo album in the works? Or is there another band coming up?
I have a nice little band. I've been playing recently with Casey Tennis and Adam Gross. They've been kind enough to help me out, and they're wonderful. I already have another record almost done, so hopefully that'll come out soon. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but there is more. There's much more. I want to tour in the fall and try to make a good go of this one. But, I'll just keep meddling, doing my thing. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I am so happy about this record coming out. I'm beside myself. It's great.
Vinyl, CD,
vinyl,
iTunes, all
vinyl and CD. It's got a lot of low end, so careful out there. I'm really excited about it. Yeah, it's coming out in as many formats as we can, but it's definitely a beautiful, nice pressing with a download in it and some orange vinyl and all that kind of thing.
So, very cool. Yeah. Very cool. All right, great. Anything else that you'd like to talk about, or?
I just want to remind everybody that it's okay to try new things.